Blog Talk Radio.
This is Kevin Boylo with Ephes Radio, the Perverse Mind, broadcasting from Missoula, Montana. It's February 23rd, Saturday, 3:30 p.m. Missoula, Montana Mountain Time. That's 2:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Last week, we took up the topic of dark arrows and perversion. And this week, I wanted to explore a little bit about Michel Foucault's notion of the use of pleasure. And hopefully, we'll finish this segment today. If not, we'll just continue it next week. I want to also make the announcement that the Existential Psychoanalytic Institute Society sponsors this radio show very generously. And while we are currently broadcasting from Missoula, Montana, we hope to be broadcasting from the San Francisco Bay Area later this spring, back in Missoula over the summer, and then back to San Francisco in the fall. With our great intent to finally end up in New York City within a few years. But until then, we're broadcasting from the mountains. If we recall, Michel Foucault's aim was to provide an ethic that would serve as the source of an effective resistance to individuating power. As I've explained before in earlier segments, because of individuating power, individuals believe they have a personal truth that can be revealed through confession or psychotherapy. In the Christian indoctrinated Middle Ages, individuals produced truth with regard to their ethical behavior, and this was especially focused on sexuality. And therefore, in the 20th and 21st centuries, we individuals believe that we can discover our true selves with the guidance of an expert, like a psychotherapist, psychologist, psychoanalyst. however, Foucault links truth with power and argues that any self-knowledge we attain is a product of power forces and the knowledge it harnesses in order to categorize human beings. And so he sets about to work on revealing the history of sexuality and within that, how individuals from ancient Greco-Roman civilization produced truth with regards to their ethical behavior, drawing also from the practices of the Stoics in order to formulate the practice of an ethics that is a politically effective resistance against individuating power. The second and third volumes of Foucault's History of Sexuality trace the transformation in the problematization of sexual practice between the classical and Hellenistic periods. Greek civilization then was concerned about desire, pleasure, and the erotic relations between citizens. But we took that up when we were talking with Professor Stephen Goldman in our discussion about Eros and ancient Greece. An art of existence arose in Greek culture then based upon concern for the self. As a part of this art, persons, people, were posited as moral subjects for whom freedom from enslavement and control of the self were important values. Sexual moderation was a form of this freedom. Although the possibility was not available to everyone, this was actually more available to the higher classes of male citizens. However, this value still trickled down into the populace, and self-mastery became an important Greek value. This enabled a person not only to properly govern himself, but to rule others. And therefore, caring for the self demanded that humans not allow themselves to be carried passively by the demands of the flesh. And remember, the topic of today is the use of pleasure, where our overarching mission here is to continue to explore Eros and the erotic elements in our culture in contemporary times, and how Eros is either working for us or against us in our current ideological formations in the social and political world. So the proper use of pleasure then for the Greeks became something that was determined by orthos logos, or right reason. This appeal to right reason allowed free persons to determine the proper exercise of their needs and thereby engage in the constitution of moral subjectivity. And most importantly, as Foucault points out, the role of truth in this art of existence is not epistemic. It is not epistemological. It is rather, in contrast, aesthetic. Aesthetically based truth, then, is the application of the values of art to the practice of the self as an ethical subject. So we can see here that true artists, and art in general, is far more than craft. It is, at the deepest level, our subjectivity, and perhaps a liberating domain that has been heretofore closed because of the Socratic turn and the priority of epistemology as first philosophy. So, therefore, we don't discover moral truth. It's something that we practice by adhering to certain rules of propriety, and this sort of truth, the aesthetically based form of truth, guides us into an art of constituting ourselves as moral subjects so that life becomes a work of art and a thing of beauty. Self-mastery through the practice of rules of propriety is therefore an aesthetic value, not a state of affairs that can be realized through contemplation. Therefore, it's a making to creation, and it's not a finding. In Foucault's historical search, he finds that the aesthetic of existence was displaced by the Socratic Platonic notion of Eros, which was the purposeful art of love. Ethics as a practice of the self became transformed into a metaphysics within the domain of sexual practices. Whereas one formerly inquired into the proper thing to do, one now inquired into the very nature of truth itself. The love of truth replaced the love of self and others. The practice of the rules of propriety gave way to the practice of the search for doctrinal truth. And thus, even though the arts of existence continued in the Hellenistic age, they were modified by Plato's focus on the metaphysical search for the being of truth. The third volume of The History of Sexuality addresses this transformation and explores the new cultivation of the self that arose in the first two centuries of the Roman Empire. Although self-mastery was still highly valued, the manner of achieving it had changed. There were more appeals to universal reason as a basis for effecting self-transformation and a concerted effort for truth and knowledge, especially about the self. The idea was that the more knowledge one acquired about the self, the more one could approach that ideal of truth and thereby achieve self-mastery. The ethics of the self became controlled, therefore, by the metaphysics of truth. And so you can see, certainly in temporary time, how a number of us are afflicted by an absolute obsession with amassing as much profound knowledge as humanly possible, especially in human understanding, human sciences, hermeneutics, history. And you can see how this has grown out of this ancient Greek metaphysics. Foucault explores ancient Greco practices of self-mastery to show how some educated sectors from the Hellenistic era entered into truth games that revolved around sexual practices. And this is a highly individualist, although a community-oriented practice where each individual fashioned his or her own subjectivity out of his relationship to this ultimate discoverable Platonic truth. Individuals were dispersed among a continuum of levels of self-mastery and governed themselves as such. This created a kind of a social and political regulatory hierarchy, dynamic, and logic. And therefore, only one who could rule himself was fit to rule others. According to Foucault, then, eventually the aesthetic model of truth died, leaving the Socratic Platonic model to stand alone. The Platonic model, very importantly, became the forerunner to the later Christian idea of a deep self that could be discovered. Part of going to confession was to discover these foundational aspects to oneself that one ought to excise, cut out, in order to live a good Christian life. And in to eliminate what I'm trying to say here, this form of truth-seeking really avoids or diverges from the practice of an aesthetic ideal. So, in this aesthetic AES, aesthetic ideal, the question of a relationship between self and truth does not exist. Not in the Platonic notion of truth, which applies in metaphysics. Foucault finds that there's been a trend of belief beginning the ancient Greeks, continuing through pre-modern Christianity, that through discovering knowledge of the self, we can determine the truth of who we are. And we've talked before on our radio program about individuating power, biopower, and that power not only represses, as perhaps Freud thought, but that it creates, it produces effects, usually with the contributions of the human sciences that purport to categorize, label, and say the truth about who we are. One of these discourses that I practice as a clinician, but also as a theorist, is psychoanalysis. And in psychoanalysis, which is very much like Christian confession, Catholic confession, we have the underlying assumption that we can discover our truth about the nature of who we are. And therefore, within this assumption, we have a convergence of power and knowledge coming together to create subjectivity. And, okay, so some think it important, as did Foucault, that we could develop a relationship to the self, an ethics that can serve as an effective resistance against the individuating power that traverses an individual's belief that there is a true self that can be discovered. So there are all sorts of critiques about this notion of objective truth, ranging from Nietzsche to Charles Taylor. And what Foucault's pointing out and illuminating is that each historical period has its own regime its own regime of truth. It's a politics of truth. And so certain discourses function as true. Certain people within those discourses are truth sayers and can say what the truth is, and others not so much. And so within this notion of truth is can never be discovered in its bare form. Truth is always historically conditioned through relations of power that harness various discourses, primarily in the human sciences. So also then what you can derive from this is that as Foucault pointed out, we are forced. Each human being is forced into producing truth. We must speak the truth. We must confess our truth. We must say what our truth is. And we're kind of forced into it by this sort of underlying logic in modernism and postmodernism. Therefore, we can speak of truth as a set of economies of truth. So the important thing to note is that there, the will to truth in our culture is one of its most profound and powerful axioms that motivates all of us in how we construe our subjectivity and how we construct our ethical relationship to ourselves. And an interesting problematic is whether one can ever escape these truths or transcend them in some way through clever thinking, deep thinking, or mystical thinking, or meditation. And you can't. Unfortunately, you cannot engage in discursive reasoning in a way that avoids these economies of truth that are underwritten by relations of power. Certainly, you can engage in practices that allow temporary alleviation of discursive thinking. But if you're not engaged in discursive thinking, you're not engaged in self-representation as a moral subject. So we cannot escape these relations of power in our culture that really create protocols about how to be, how to do, how to think, which set up standards of normalization. And if you think about it, your whole life is pretty much pushed and pulled by these standards of normalization that operate explicitly or implicitly in everything that you do. So there's no pure possibility of a phenomenological transcendence if you buy into Foucault's notion of power. And so then the question is, how can we ever liberate ourselves if we can't step out of these relations of power? Could we replace a regime? Could we replace a micro-regime? And if so, how would one measure excuse me, increases or decreases in liberation? So if all truth is relative to the relations of power, this means that any truth an individual attempts to excavate about himself is also regime relative. Any apparent truth that an individual uncovers about himself merely the product of an appeal is according to the knowledge that circulates in society in which the individual lives. But there's no ultimate naked truth that can be discovered. But Foucault believes that we can recognize increases in liberation if we dispense with the search for truth and focus on a new kind of resistance. And this involves subjugated knowledges, plebeian resistance, and these are interesting forms of resistance that for Foucault don't expose any kind of independent or ultimate truth. They merely A, expose power relations, and B, potentially rearrange power relations. However, there's no possibility of a global transformation. And so political activists who rant and rave about macro and global transformation don't understand that that's theoretically impossible. However, Foucault says there's still a way to engage in a liberation, a kind of resistance to these predominance of the epistemological as first philosophy, and argues that we have to tie our practice to an aesthetics of existence, and that we have to create ourselves as works of art, and relate our self-relation, our very ethics, our very ethos of subjectivity. We have to relate it or base it on creative activity. And this was Herbert Marcuse's point, is that to the extent that we diminished our creative activity, you know, painting by numbers, for example, or living within a dogmatic frame of reference in any domain of life, in the bourgeois life is dogmatic by its very nature, and therefore is non-creative. And so he sees the formation of the self in an ethical context as a process in which we delimit portions of ourselves which become objects of our moral practice. And so it's constant transformation in a way that's not tied to epistemological truth. And therefore, there's a form of an ethos that escapes the regimes of truth, which are epistemologically formed and determined. And so Foucault's not advocating the sort of psychoanalytic approach of taking oneself as a reflexive subject in order to discover, keyword discover, personal truth through hermeneutic priory. And he therefore avoids the futile inquiry into a deep self that can be discovered. So, you know, keep in mind what's at stake here. He is basically deconstructing psychotherapy and confession and saying that whatever it is that you're saying in psychotherapy, you're just basically buying into relations of power that emerge from the mouthpiece of the therapist to whom you're speaking. And every therapist has a certain position within the matrix of power and knowledge. And so if you think about these deep hermeneutic goals for Foucault, what you're going to end up with is not necessarily a gain in liberation, but perhaps a deeper ensnarement into your own enslavement and confusion. And the best that you could do is just trade one position for another. And you often hear college kids talking about the coolest theory of the day or the week, and exchanging that for another one the following week or the next month or the next year. And lawyers talk like lawyers, doctors talk like doctors, et cetera, et cetera. But what they don't understand is that their very structuralized discourse that they use is always deeply conditioned in ways that are very hard to transcend and gain perspective on. So what Foucault is saying is that, and this is actually where French minimalism emerged from, and I'm talking about French minimalism that came out of the French New Novel in literature. And it's this idea that let's ironically engage into a dialectic with the notion of the Balzacian novel and the deeply reflective protagonist who comes to understand herself or himself at the end of the novel. Let's attack that notion and use a form of literature that attempts to erase as much of a deep self or a hidden hermeneutic as possible, and so that we're just skimming along the surface with a bracketed, and this is transcendental phenomenological concept, bracketing the whole notion of a deep self, and that where we can really gain in liberation or freedom is through an aesthetic, creative transformation itself, you know, through writing, through music, through some kind of creative activity. In anything that you do, you have the potential for self-transformation that's not tied to a reflexive or deep guilty subject. Deep guilty subject, right? That the Freudian subject, in other words. So it has a very, very different philosophy of mind attached to it, and it's a very, I would say, brusque form of repartee with the notion of a deep self. And so within this ethical practice, an individual creates certain beautiful ways of relating to oneself and to others. And so there's no idea of renouncing part of the self as the Christians did or do, and no paralytic quality of trying to discover a deep platonic metaphysical form of truth. So in other words, instead of contemplation, we want to engage in practice, a certain, which is very interesting because that, in a lot of ways, what Levinas takes up is a non-hermeneutically deep form of, I think, relatedness to the other, and instead prioritizes a kind of immediate phenomenological dyadic interplay between two people that avoids the whole deep self problem and attempts to create a dyadic union of in the aesthetic realm. So involves a lot of play, involves imagination, and so it means that one must take oneself, as he says, as an object of a complex and difficult elaboration, and therefore involves care for the self, constant care for the self, and the goal of inventing oneself. And if you really think about that, it's a very, very profound thought. How much do we invent ourselves? Or, on the other side of things, how much do we copy others? How much do we invent ourselves, and how much do we copy others? Now, we're going to take this up next week. Again, we're going to pick up right where we left off. And I want to say it's been a pleasure being here today with you. This is Kevin Boileau, core faculty member at the Existential Psychoanalytic Institute Society of North America, with Ethos Radio, The Perverse Mind, broadcasting from Missoula, Montana. And it's a nice cloudy day here in Missoula. We're happy to announce our new San Francisco office. And we wish all good things to all of our members and everyone else in the world. From Ethos Radio and Kevin Boylo, your host, have a very, very good day. Take care.